Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A wide-ranging opioid measure passes its first House committee unanimously, but that doesn't mean lawmakers don't have misgivings.
It's going to be on this database forever.
Also tonight, Florida lawmakers are looking to expand need-based financial aid so fewer higher ed students will have to leave school due to lack of money.
I really don't want to go back home. I really love being at FAMU a lot.
We'll also hear about measures to move more local decision-making under the authority of the Florida legislature, new tools to help first responders locate lost people who have disabilities, and a bill to prevent the steroid juicing of racing greyhounds. I'm Tom Flanagan, day three of the session, and this is Capitol Report. In many ways, the Florida legislature is sort of like a really big, really complicated piece of machinery. It's very powerful and can do many amazing things, but because it is so large and complex, it can take a while to get it going. But not so this legislative session. Both the House and the Senate scheduled floor action for this afternoon, which, being only day three of session, is really early in the process. One might be forgiven for thinking that lawmakers might be really eager to get their work done on time and then go on to other things. Running for re-election or for some other political job, perhaps. But just about everyone at the Capitol, Governor Scott, House and Senate leadership and all, said a top priority this session would be doing something about the state's exploding opioid addiction crisis. Lawmakers are beginning to tackle that crisis, but while seemingly everyone agrees the legislature needs to intervene, Nick Evans reports the road ahead might be a little bumpy, as even supporters seem to have quibbles, tweaks, or additions they'd like to offer.
The Florida Senate's primary opioid measure isn't off to an auspicious start.
Our plan this morning is to workshop Senate Bill 8 relating to controlled substances by taking public testimony.
This is Tampa Republican Senator Dana Young, chair of the Health Policy Committee.
The sponsor of the bill, Senator Beniquisto, has been working very, very hard to make sure that we have the best bill, the best work product going forward. There are still some technical aspects that she is working on along with committee staff, and we are not going to be ready for her to present that bill today.
Despite holding a workshop solely devoted to opioid policy last October, the Senate plan wasn't ready for a vote Wednesday morning. In the House, Bradenton Republican Jim Boyd was, but he came in ready for some pushback.
This is not, I repeat, this is not getting at chronic pain management, where somebody has a debilitating disease, they've been on pain meds for a number of years, and in order to manage their daily lives and to get through the day, they have to have this medicine.
Boyd and the Senate sponsor, Fort Myers Republican Lizbeth Beniquisto, are carrying bills built around a set of policy positions staked out by Governor Rick Scott. The governor wants new funding for treatment and enforcement, mandatory usage of a drug monitoring program, and some limits on how much doctors can prescribe. Brandon Luskin, an orthopedic hand surgeon, supports Boyd's bill, but he warns the 3 to 7 day supply cap is probably insufficient in some cases.
In orthopedics, we do things to people that you couldn't imagine. If I fix your distal radius fracture, I am literally opening your arm with a knife under anesthesia And I'm moving muscles and tendons and nerves strategically out of the way, and then I am drilling with a drill, and we use saws and we do all sorts of things. It's really controlled demolition.
He goes on to explain what constitutes a day's supply is fuzzy as well. And the confusion could extend to pharmacists too. Under Boyd's measure, extending a prescription to 7 days requires the doctor certify it's, quote, medically necessary. There's just one problem. To a pharmacist, the medically necessary designation means use the brand name drug listed on the script, not a generic. Meanwhile, some committee members worry about the information logged in the prescription drug database living there forever.
Now let's think about that for a minute.
Representative Kerry Pigman, a Republican from Sebring, is an emergency room physician.
If you've ever been given a prescription of Zolotepine or Ambien, a sleep medicine, that's going to be on this database. If you've ever been prescribed for shift disorder, Provigil, which is modafinil, that's going to be on this database. Any psychotropic you've ever been prescribed is going to be on this database. If you've ever had bad diarrhea and was given a prescription for Lamotil, it's going to be on this database forever.
That last one is new. The current prescription drug monitoring program only tracks controlled substances in Schedules 2 through 4. Boyd's measure would extend reporting to Schedule 5, capturing drugs like Lamotil. Pigman and other committee members seem likely to push for limits on a patient's prescription history. All that said, Boyd's measure isn't facing opposition so much as different kinds of support. The opioid crisis is drawing significant attention statewide, and there are a lot of cooks who would like to find their way into the kitchen. Democrats, though, are hoping to use the heightened awareness to push a raft of their own measures, including a return of the Office of Drug Control, federal waivers so Medicaid dollars can be used for treatment, and permission for more local entities to set up needle exchange programs. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
One of the first major pieces of legislation is moving forward, an effort to expand both merit and need-based financial aid programs and revamp the way students pay tuition at universities. Len Hatter reports the measure has bipartisan support, despite concerns about part of the plan pushing the schools to get kids out within 4 years.
The proposal is Senate Bill 4, and it's a priority of Senate President Joe Negron, a response to a university tour 2 years ago where he encountered students like Florida A&M University environmental science major DeMarcus Robinson.
So my story is I probably won't be able to come back next semester, being that I have a balance this semester, and I don't know how to pay for next year. So I thought about going back home. I really don't want to go back home. I really love being at FAMU a lot.
Affordability is an issue for students. Not all have the state's Bright Futures Merit Scholarship, which would see an increase in funding to cover 100% of costs for students who qualify for the highest level. A few years ago, the state increased requirements for students to get it. The result? Fewer minority students have qualified in recent years. But Republican Senator Bill Galvano says increases in need-based aid make up for it.
This bill doesn't exist in a vacuum, and if you go back and look at our budget last year, while merit-based aid increased at historic levels, need-based aid increased at even more historic levels, almost 90% increase. So we're capturing every component. This deals specifically the provision you're talking about with that merit-based component. But like I said, we also have the first generation match in here. We have the farm worker program, and it's going to go very well with our budget going forward.
What continues to be of worry is a plan to use four-year graduation rates as part of a metric system that helps determine how much funding Florida's public universities receive. The federal government uses a six-year graduation rate, and many university programs take at least 5 years to complete. Furthermore, while some schools like the University of Florida have nearly 70% of their students graduating within 4 years, others like Florida A&M University have less than 20%. The reason, Galvano says, goes back to affordability.
The impact on students and families, as we've now been able to quantify, is close to, $22,000-$23,000 a year for every year a student is spending time another year within the system.
That's why institutions would have to consider block tuition, a flat rate per semester, instead of billing students class by class. But that's tricky, because while students who take more classes could see a savings, those who take fewer could end up paying more. Last year, Negron's proposal failed as it was linked to a controversial plan that also made changes to the state's community colleges. This year, the bill stands on its own, and it's even gotten an endorsement from House Speaker Richard Corcoran. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, bills looking to diminish the power of local governments are hitting the legislature this session.
My Republican colleagues claims to be all about local control until the decisions begin to conflict with their agenda.
Law enforcement agencies might find it easier to search for people with disabilities under one legislative proposal.
2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes could save a life. We GPS our phones, our cars, and everything else that's got monetary value. Why can't we do it for our children, our most precious resource?
And a bill that would ban the use of steroids in racing greyhounds is moving forward, but the lawmaker pushing it worries it could once again get bogged down.
This is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't have injury reporting. It's why we can't have testing for anabolic steroids. It's why we can't have decoupling.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Democratic Representative Chevron Jones and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, also a Democrat, are speaking out against preemption policies. Sean Mulcahy reports they're pushing back against what they view as, in their words, the war on local communities.
Representative Chevron Jones is lashing out against attempts to restrict the power of local governments. He claims preemption, blocking cities and counties from passing local ordinances, leads to lower wages, reduced worker benefits, and less local hiring. He also claims preemption stifles democracy and silences local voices.
This is called super preemption, and it chills democracy at the local level. This is contrary to our ideas of local control, freedom of speech, and a vesting of power of our citizens to participate in a democratic process.
Mayor Gillum, a Democratic candidate for governor, has been a longtime advocate for local rights. He has pushed back in the past against laws that restrict the power of local governments. He says Republicans are working against the will of the people.
And now, because it is being considered by the party in control, the party who once said that government is best when it is closest to the people, when they get to Tallahassee, decide to betray that very ideal.
Rich Templin of the Florida AFL-CIO said that bypassing local ordinances opens Tallahassee to corporate interests and no longer works for the people. He said the will of people rests with the local government.
The Florida legislature has become a one-stop shop for corporate special interests.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran and Gillum have clashed in the past over preemption policies. Corcoran is an outspoken advocate for preempting local laws. In a speech last August, Corcoran said governments create a, quote, patchwork quilt of policies that are unsustainable and bog down businesses in regulations.
Every year, it's something we can't even fathom or conceive the stuff that they come up with on the local government level. But the point is that they are where the fights are.
Additionally, Corcoran says he believes the Constitution enumerates certain powers to the federal government, and the rest lies with the states. It's up to the states to dole out the powers to local governments, but the final decision remains with state lawmakers. There are a number of preemption bills being passed through the legislature this session. These measures will force cities to comply with federal immigration law, place community redevelopment agencies under the purview of the legislature, and block ordinances that regulate vacation rentals. Lawmakers will begin voting on some of the bills this week, placing the fight for local governments at the heart of the 2018 session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy in Tallahassee.
Project Leo could launch statewide under a bill that has passed its first House committee. As Sasha Cordner reports, it would make it easier for law enforcers to track missing people who have special needs.
Project Leo is named after a young autistic boy who went missing in 2014. 3 days later, Leo Walker's body was found in a body of water. It happened in Live Oak, where Buddy Williams leads the city's police department.
We lost the life of a 9-year-old boy, and it could have been prevented. It could have been prevented.
Named after Leo, Williams supported efforts to create a pilot program called Project Leo in Statute. It allows law enforcement to use GPS-like technology to track these kids prone to wandering off. Williams says it's both a cheaper and more efficient lifesaver.
2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes could save a life. We GPS our phones, our cars, and everything else that's got monetary value. Why can't we do it for our children, our most precious resource?
Lake City Republican Representative Elizabeth Porter, who sponsored the pilot project effort, says she already knows of some successes.
There was this past year an 8-year-old child in Lafayette County, Mayo, who wandered away from his home. And this is a county that only has 8 total sheriff's deputies. And it's a large county, very rural, very wooded. They were able, and he had one of these devices, they were able to find the individual within 15 minutes. He was a quarter mile from home and 200 yards from the Suwannee River. And if any of you know anything about autistic individuals, they are drawn to water, unfortunately, with tragic circumstances.
The Project Leo pilot has run in the following areas: Alachua, Baker, Columbia, as well as Hamilton and Suwannee counties. Now, a new bill by Porter expands that effort statewide.
This bill would expand Project Leo statewide and permits any institution in the state university system to participate in a program that provides these personal aid devices to aid search and rescue efforts for persons with special needs in the case of elopement, which is common for individuals with autism to do. The bill makes the University of Florida responsible for developing criteria for the selection of participants in the project.
The University of Florida Center for Autism and Related Disabilities, or CARD, will actually be responsible for developing criteria for the program. And Porter says CARD officials are already looking into how to make this program more accessible to affected Floridians and law enforcement.
It provides devices and equipment, provides training to deputies, and it creates public awareness materials and social media communications that would be utilized throughout the state in order to promote the availability of these products and the project itself to the individuals and families of individuals who are affected by their children or their relatives that have these autism-related spectrum disorders.
Porter's bill has so far passed the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee and has 2 more committees to go before it heads to the floor. Meanwhile, the Senate version of the bill has not yet had a hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Let's step away from the Capitol for just a few moments to check out a story from down Fort Myers way. Florida Gulf Coast University began its spring semester this week, but for some students on Tuesday, that meant wading through a sea of reporters and officers just to get into the classroom. We get that story from Rachel Iacovone at member station WGCU.
Like, I've never had a class where I had to deal with media or, the police having to stand outside of the classroom.
That was Tammy Falcon. She's one of the 50 students enrolled in the White Racism Sociology course at FGCU. The purpose of the class, as explained in its course description, is to, quote, examine racist ideologies, laws, policies, and practices that have operated for hundreds of years to maintain white racial domination over those racialized as non-white, end quote. After the university received virulent opposition across social media, FGCU President Mike Martin issued a statement in support of the course back in November, 2 months before its first class meeting.
I'm not going to get in the business, unless people get way out of bounds, of trying to manipulate the coursework offered by legitimately good professors that engage our students. And I just want to send that message.
That message was well received by the course's professor, Dr. Ted Thornhill. He says he appreciates any support he gets amidst some 46 pages and counting of emailed threats he's received regarding the chorus. Some call him racial slurs. Others wish cancer, specifically stage 4, upon him and his family. Despite that, Thornhill seemed at ease leaving the first lecture.
It went well. You know, it's the first day of the semester, so we mostly spent time going over the syllabus and setting expectations, talking about the requirements of the course. The kind of meat and potatoes issues, the topics that we'll address in the course schedule are going to begin on Thursday.
Thursday's lecture will focus on subjects such as the myth that Black people are naturally good athletes, the racial measurement in the American census, and the racialization of Islamophobia. Tammy Falcon says she's looking forward to it after today's relatively calm meeting.
It's the first day, so everyone seemed just quiet and like no one knew each other. But you know, I have a feeling that there will be some people who will be more outspoken about certain things.
Thornhill says that's fine, as long as it's a productive discussion. It's the outsiders, the ones opposing the topic outside the four walls of his classroom, that worried him and the university police department enough to station officers all along the academic hall's entrance. I'm Rachel Iacovone in Fort Myers.
Okay, we're back in Tallahassee now. Bob Brooks from our sister operation, the Florida Channel, takes a look at some of the other major bill action happening in the legislature.
With one day left in the first week of the 2018 Florida legislative session, bills under committee consideration today included House Bill 55, entitled Sale of Firearms. Sponsored by Representative Frank White from Pensacola, this bill requires the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to accept credit and debit cards from firearms dealers when they pay fees to conduct criminal history checks. It unanimously passed the House Judiciary Committee and has one more committee stop. House Bill 135, entitled Motor Vehicle Registration Applications, sponsored by Representatives Loren Owsley and Matt Wilhite, this bill requires the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles to include language on the motor vehicle registration application that allows a deaf or hard of hearing applicant to indicate voluntarily that he or she is deaf or hard of hearing. The bill was marked favorable by the Government Accountability Committee and is now headed for the full House. On the Senate side, Senate Bill 186, the Resign to Run Law. This would require an officer who qualifies for federal public office to resign from the office he or she presently holds if the terms, or any part of them, run concurrently. It also prescribes the requirements for the written resignation and provides for an automatic, irrevocable resignation in the event of noncompliance. Senate Bill 186 was voted favorably by the Senate Rules Committee and placed on the calendar for second reading. And finally, Senate Bill 220, entitled Bankruptcy Matters in Foreclosure Proceedings, sponsored by Senator Kathleen Passidomo. This bill specifies how certain documents from a person's bankruptcy proceeding may be used as evidence in a foreclosure action. The bill was voted favorable by rules and placed on the Senate calendar for second reading. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a bill that would ban the use of steroids in racing greyhounds passed its first hurdle in the House. But Regan McCarthy reports another bill has been filed that would specifically legalize the drug.
Anabolic steroids are administered to female racing greyhounds to keep them from going into heat so they can continue racing with their male counterparts without having to take a timeout. But Orlando Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo-Smith says the drugs can have long-term negative side effects.
Negative effects on the dog's heart function. And other studies have linked its use to liver and kidney and cartilage damage, gastrointestinal problems, even shock. Because testosterone is it's derived from the male sex hormone, it can also interfere with the natural female reproductive cycle. Additional complications involving female organs and tissue can also develop.
Guillermo Smith says there are better methods for dealing with the female dog's heat cycle, like separating them from the male dogs, which Guillermo Smith admits means the dogs would need to take some time off from racing.
And I understand what the concern is from the folks who represent the dog trainers and the breeders, but more specifically the dog trainers. The concern is for every single day that a female dog is not racing, they lose money. That is exactly what this is about. They use anabolic steroids to cut costs, to cut corners. It's the cheapest, easiest way to handle the situation regardless of the consequences.
But some lawmakers, like Cape Coral Republican Representative Dane Eagle, question whether there are legitimate uses for steroids.
I use a nasal spray daily for allergies. I don't think it gives me added effects in the gym. Otherwise, it'd probably be a pretty popular product. Is there something we can do then, rather than absolutely abolishing everything, and find a middle ground for something that might help dogs?
Guillermo Smith says it's true. There are circumstances in which the drugs could be medically needed.
To build up muscle mass for older dogs who are frail, who have brittle bones, who have deteriorating muscle capacity, in an effort to give them a boost so that they can continue to live their lives without interruption and as comfortably as possible. Obviously, the older dogs that would apply to should not be racing on tracks.
And Guillermo Smith says that means this legislation wouldn't apply to dogs in those circumstances. Further, he says that explanation is even more reason racing dogs shouldn't be using the drugs. If the drugs are used for building muscle, he says giving it to a racing greyhound amounts to cheating. The House Tourism and Gaming Control Committee debated what Guillermo Smith says should be a straightforward measure for more than an hour. During that time, lawmakers discussed issues ranging from the state's drug testing policy, giving dogs cocaine, and whether continuing greyhound racing in Florida makes sense at all.
This is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't have injury reporting. It's why we can't have testing for anabolic steroids. It's why we can't have decoupling. It's why we can't have so many of the common sense things that this legislature has been trying to do for years and years and years. Because the industry, and by industry I mean the dog trainers, and the breeders represented by FGA are so resistant to change, so resistant. No change whatsoever.
A proposal that would end greyhound racing is moving forward in the State Constitution Revision Commission. It could put the question to a vote before the people. Senator Tom Lee, who is also on the CRC, is behind that proposal. He says similar measures have failed again and again in the legislature due to industry pressure, and feels the only way to make change may be through the state's constitution. Meanwhile, a lawmaker in the Senate has filed a bill that would specifically legalize the use of anabolic steroids in racing greyhounds for the purpose of birth control. The measure by Boca Raton Democratic Representative Kevin Rader also allows steroids prescribed by veterinarians. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Kortner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our sister operation, the Florida Channel, Sean McCahey, and our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport, and please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades restoration and fish and wildlife conservation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.